From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made yesterday when thousands of New York students finished the first round of state testing, third and eighth graders taking the English exams. That is, unless they refuse to do so. Once again, thousands of parents signed refusal forms. The early data shows that this year, roughly the same number of students are opting out as last year. In some schools, it can be a quarter, some a third. In a few schools, more than half. The total opt-out number last year was around 20%, or about 240,000 students. The deputy director of the New York State Council of School Superintendents, Bob Lowry, said yesterday, quote, "The whole thing has become a mess." Well, next week are the math exams. Can New York State rely on these exams with a significant number of opt-outs? Are they representative of anything? The state tried to make some changes this year. A moratorium has been placed on the use of test scores in teacher evaluations, and the state education department shortened the exams and eliminated time constraints for those students who are productively working. But for some parents, that is not good enough, and we want to talk about that this hour with our wide range of guests. Let me go ahead and welcome them now. In studio with us are a couple of parents, very active parents, who are, I think fair to say, concerned with testing and opting out. And it starts with Eileen Graham. She is the co-founder of Black Student Leadership. That's an advocacy group for families. She's got three kids, one in third grade. Eileen, nice having you here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Ron Hall is here. Ronald's a parent also in favor of the opt-out movement. He has three kids himself. He is a co-founder of Black Student Leadership and of all the other titles as well. What else are you doing these days, Ronald?
Parent president of the Rochester Arts and Integrated Technology at the Franklin campus.
Okay, very busy.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Sam Redford made the drive in from Buffalo, all the way from Buffalo today.
Yes, sir.
He's got two kids, five grandkids, who opted in, took the test this week. He's the head of the Buffalo District Parenting Coordinating Council, as well as what, Sam?
The New York Parent Alliance for Learning Standards.
All right, thanks for being here, and thanks for making the drive for us. And on the line with us is Steve Sigmund. He is the executive director of High Achievement New York. And Steve, thank you for taking the time for the program as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I was up in Rochester on Monday, and you all welcomed me with a spring snowstorm. So I got the full feeling of it.
Today, it is even colder, I think, today. So sorry about that, Steve. And I know your time is limited. I'll start with you, Steve. Looking at the numbers so far, the rough estimates are roughly the same of opt-outs this year compared to last year. And you've got more tests next week. Are you disappointed by that? What do you make of what's happening so far?
No, actually, we're encouraged by it. I mean, it takes a long time to right a ship, right? And the fact that the opt-out numbers seem to have been stemmed around the state, and they're down in lots of places, including around Rochester. Long Island is still a significant problem. So the state has just begun to make significant improvements to the test and changing the testing provider. And so that that takes a while for that message to get to parents. And you have to remember that if 20% are opting out, that means the overwhelming majority are taking these tests. And we think that's an important thing to do for a number of reasons. One, as a diagnostic measure for kids to be able to get in front of problems that are happening. Two, as a means of ensuring equity and education equity across the state. And three, as a means to prepare for what will be high-stakes tests that are Common Core aligned in high school when you have to graduate from the Regents and take college entrance exams.
Sam, you're a parent, a grandparent, your five grandkids taking the tests. Why do you find the value in these that makes you want to say we should be encouraging kids to take these tests?
It's critical that our children take these tests because it's really a dipstick to let us know right where our children are at in comparison to other children in the school district and in comparison to other children across the state. So when it's all said and done, we obviously have the teacher test and the teacher evaluation. I used to be a teacher. I taught 7th to 8th grade math. I know the value of those. But that don't give me a comparison of what's going on with children across the district or across the state. And in the global marketplace that we live in, our children have to be prepared to compete globally. I can't rely just on that one set of data that's coming from the teacher. I need a broader set of data so I can best help my child.
All right, Eileen, I know you disagree. Why?
Absolutely. I think high stakes testing obviously affects Black and brown children in a very negative way because it's a mismatch. That's not true that it tells us how our children are performing. The teachers know how their children are performing, and we need to engage them and ask them and support them. And as a parent of a third grader, I've talked with my daughter's teacher several times, and the tests the results come back late. They come back when she's going to have a new teacher. So we have to figure out a way to not only support the students and use common sense in the opting out of these high stakes exam, SAT, all those are high stakes. They're not a reflection of what our children are actually learning. So a special ed child is taking the same test that my third grader is taking, and that's not accurate, you know. And we look at receivership. The receivership is a clear example of what high stakes testing does to our district. It demonizes a whole district like Rochester. It's not showing an accurate picture of what's happening in the building and what these people are doing to help these children.
And before I turn over to Ronald for his thoughts as well, you mentioned you don't like the SATs as a measurement. SAT, ACT, you know, traditional, long used, et cetera. But if you're telling kids at a young age now, we don't like these tests, they're not representative, opt out. You know, you may not like the SAT or ACT, but I know some parents think right now that's the world we're living in. And if we're telling them don't take those, are you removing yourselves from opportunity?
No, I'm not for opting out of every test.
Sure.
I'm not anti-testing. What I'm suggesting as a parent and what I'm standing up for and letting whoever they is, New York State, whomever, is that, you know, we have to encourage our children to perform and take. If I fail a math exam, I want to get the results back so I can know where I'm my area of weakness is. You know, if I'm taking an exam that is not a reflection of what I do every day, of what I'm learning every day. I mean, we have completely removed social studies. We've removed so many other learning opportunities because we're trying to prepare for the exam. An exam, you know, that may not even be a question that our teachers are teaching our children. And the teachers know what these kids need to compete globally.
All right, Ronald Hall is the co-founder of Black Student Leadership, and again, that's a parent advocacy group. And you heard Eileen say that she's concerned that these kind of tests disproportionately and negatively impact Black and brown students.
Yes.
You agree with that? Why is that?
Yes. When you have a graduation, when you have a city school district such as Rochester and actually Buffalo and most of the urban districts that are graduating Black and brown children at a percentage of like 9, 10, 11, 12%, we have to look at the fundamental issues that's creating that disparity. And when the teachers have to adjust their curriculum just to teach to a test, you know, those results are going to be flawed. And it's going to highlight what's actually wrong with the system itself. And what I advocate for is giving more authority to the teachers to teach the children the curriculum in which they need. We need to focus on the building blocks, which are reading, writing, and math. And right now, as a whole, as a district, that's where our deficiencies are. It's like that in Rochester, Buffalo, and Syracuse.
Sam, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, and although I can appreciate, you know, what's been said, let's be real. We didn't start standardized testing until 2002. And those disparities that was going on in those districts was going on in the district long before that. In Buffalo and Rochester, we got historically 50% graduation rates. So to suggest that have anything to do with the standardized test is a misnomer. Our students are the students who actually benefit the most from taking the standardized test because it gives us a comparison of what's going on because the reality is the vast majority of teachers that we're talking about have already opted out of our communities. They've moved out to the suburbs. Their children get standardized tests, and their children get the resources they need to ensure that they prepare for the SAT. They go to college. That's not happening in our children, in our community. Now we have something where we can have a measurement, where we can know what's going on with our children, and primarily what's driving this conversation is those teachers. Those teachers who's when they got the scores from the test, they realized that their children weren't as smart as they thought they were. They were actually closer to where our children were, and they reacted by saying, let's not take the test. And then they're trying to pull a minority community onto their issue. That's not our issue. We've had issues with equity way before a standardized test. And so we got to stay on our issues and not get pulled into teacher union issues as if they issues of the minority community, because they're not.
Sam, you used the term dipstick, though.
That's dipstick.
If it's a good measurement, if the test is appropriate. Do you think the tests are appropriate?
I think the test is absolutely appropriate. But I think just like anything, Evan, it's a learning thing. I think for example, if we find out the test was too long, I was on the governor's Common Core Task Force. We heard the concerns and we made adjustments to the test. If you think you need to get the test back earlier, let's work on getting the test back earlier. But that's very different from saying don't take the test. So you make the corrections that you need to make it useful, but you don't opt out of it.
All right. So Ron and Eileen, he's talking about the changes. And we talked about some of the changes that the state has tried to make. How come those changes haven't moved your opinion on this?
They haven't moved my opinion because the foundation of the test is flawed, okay? We want to group all the children together, teach them the same Common Core curriculum when all children don't learn the same. As a teacher, you're not going to have, 25 children that learn exactly the same way. It doesn't take into account that. And also, too, our children are getting pushed from grade to grade to grade without having the prerequisite skills to advance. So now we're putting the children in a position where those tests come back, they're doing terrible. Now they're being labeled as failures. My daughter, she's in seventh grade. She's in an honors program. On the first day of school, the teachers are saying, okay, we need you guys to focus so you guys can pass the test. Mm-hmm. The test being the Common Core. That's not effective teaching. Mm-hmm. That's not effective teaching at all. There's too much pressure on the administrators, there's too much pressure on the teachers, and there's too much pressure on the children. Mm-hmm. Now,
it's
okay, because I know Steve's time is short as well. So go ahead, Steve.
Thanks. May I just weigh in on a couple of the points that have come up?
And
here?
I promise we're going to give everyone plenty of time, but go ahead,
yeah,
Steve.
The notion that the tests aren't appropriate is just wrong, for one. They are being improved, but there's been two studies, at least, that have showed that the New York State tests are the most aligned to what are called the NAEP tests, which have been the gold standard for decades on measurement of students in fourth and eighth grade in English and math. We used very different tests in New York State before 2013, which were just not as rigorous, right? And these tests are aligned to the NAEP test. Everybody likes the NAEP test, but somehow there's dispute about these tests. Two, the notion that these tests are high stakes. Right. There may have been higher stakes associated with the test initially, and parents complained about that, and the state listened and made changes. These are not high-stakes tests now. The stakes are truly diagnostic. They can't be used for promotion. They can't be used for placement during this moratorium period. So what are the high-stakes tests, as I said at the beginning, are Regents, SATs, and ACTs, and these tests are aligned to those. So if parents are opting their kids out of these tests, they are actually having them become less prepared for the tests that really are high stakes. These are not the high stakes tests.
Steve, let me just follow up in one way before I kick it back to Eileen here. You know, you said earlier this hour that not only do you think it's appropriate, but you point out the overwhelming majority of children are taking the test, which means the overwhelming majority of parents are not opting their kids out of the test. But I think in a basic way, whenever we talk about testing on this program, we hear from a lot of parents, whether they're opting their kids out or not, they feel like we're over-testing kids, that we have overdone it a little bit when it comes to how many tests, whether they're opting out or not. Do you think we're over-testing kids, Steve?
Look, I think that's an appropriate thing to look at, and I think there's a lot of local assessments that can be looked at and that potentially can be done away with. And as Sam said, I mean, he served on the Governor's Common Core Task Force to look at just those issues and how you can reduce testing. And in fact, the state tests have been shortened this year. We at High Achievement New York were the first ones to put a number to that, showing that they were reduced by 10%, 40 minutes. Kids take an average of spend an average of 0.66 of 1% of their total academic time during the year taking these tests. I mean, they spend more time lining up for lunch than they do taking these tests.
They take a lot of time preparing for the test.
Exactly.
Right? I mean,
2%. The state's law is that it's 2% or less of the academic year is spent on test preparation. That was changed too.
Okay, and that's also, by the way, that's a goal that's been articulated by the Obama administration. That 2% number has been
correct, and they got it from New York.
Okay, Eileen.
Yes, thank you. I think that my mind goes back to the Harlem Project and just how the assessment of Black and brown children, and I think about our schools and our community, and we need the truth. I have no trust in what we're going to do. I have no trust in the patronizing conversations that I hear as a parent every day because this is a fight for me every day. And in order for us to really move forward and work together with people, whether we agree or not, we have to tell the truth. And it has to make sense to the parents, because our rights have been taken away. I personally actually sat down with a local person and asked if we could even know about the exam. Why are we hiding things? So when I make my point that this test that I opted my daughter out, it empowered me. It empowered me to not only learn more about the exam and why I'm making my decision, but now I see why you know, people are fighting and saying, please take the exam. Because back to the receivership, it almost appears that the worse a school is doing, the more money they get. So there's a lot of questions that I have. And until someone can answer the question fully and help me understand, my daughter is going to opt out.
Okay, real briefly, one follow-up for you, and then I got to let Steve go, because, and I want to get back to him. But real briefly, Eileen, is there any test right now that you would opt your children into? Are there any standards or conditions that would change that would make you say, yes, that's good enough?
Absolutely. There's exams or tests now that I think are great, because then I can sit down with the teacher and the school, the principal or whomever, can show me, this is where Brielle is, your daughter is, and this is where she needs to improve. You know, if she is in a building with special ed children and she's taking the same exam, then how are we accurately measuring these children to support them so that they can perform on a global level?
All right, Steve. Steve, last minute for you, and I know you got to go. For you, I'm wondering if you agree with the parents and the teachers who've said, how do we know what's going wrong here when we can't even see the results? What good is a test if we're not seeing the results? What do you think?
The parents and the teachers are seeing the results. They need to see that. They've been seeing them more quickly each year. They need to see them more quickly. Our own recommendations have been to make sure the tests are back to the current year's teacher by the end of the school year, and to the next year's teacher for all of their incoming students by the week before the school year. So they should be seeing those. They are seeing them more quickly. Secondly, the state has already released first 25%, then 50%, then this year 65% of the questions on the test. So the tests are publicly available and are out there. People have to take the time to look at them, and the state SED has been asking the legislature for more money to release the entirety of the test, because if they release the entirety of the test, they obviously have to, you know, get new questions in, so you're not just sort of letting the test questions out there. So look, there are continual improvements that are being made, and the state has worked very hard to listen to parents and make those improvements. The issue we have with the opt-out organizers is no matter what improvements are made, they say no. They will not take yes for an answer.
What
they
parents?
Keep,
what
keep
parents?
Moving the goalposts.
Steve, that's being disingenuous.
Us parents.
What parents? Oh, but yeah. You don't represent all parents.
Well, but I do.
Not represent parents.
I am the elected representative of all the Buffalo Public Schools parents. And here's the point. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Every parent ultimately has to make this decision for themselves.
Right.
And like you said earlier, they should have the best quality of information. But when it's all said and done, the children in the long run are not going to be able to opt out a test as a solution to a problem. Because
suggesting. Okay, I'm not anti-testing.
Okay. So the point I'm making is that ultimately, this test has no impact on the child's grade. It has no impact
it's
on whether the child.
Exam.
It does have an impact on the child's grade. They're taking valuable learning time.
The whole school.
This child has no impact on whether a child graduates. This child has no impact on whether a child is raised to the next grade. This test is information for the parent. This information is information the parent can use to understand where your child is at. If you understand how to use the information,
what I'll say is this. Okay. When I, as a senior manager, sometimes I don't know what goes on in the crux of what's really going on in the day-to-day operations. On the first day of school, when a teacher says, this class needs to get ready so we can pass that, so you guys can do well on the New York State testing, they're teaching towards the test.
That's not a good teacher. I mean, I've been a teacher, seventh grade. The good teachers, they don't care about the test.
Let's see.
The good teachers don't care about the standardized test because they're teaching kids to learn. Their kids are learning no matter what.
Is that realistic?
That's realistic.
It's not realistic.
I'm telling you what happens.
I'm in the schools every day.
I'm telling you, I've taught in the classroom. So what I'm telling you is that the good teachers are teaching those fundamental skills that a child needs to know, and they don't care how they test it. Matter of fact, a good teacher wants that information so they can find out what a child needs to get to them. It's those 10% of those teachers who are are challenged by that, who struggle with the ideal that they're being exposed, that their children
are
not learning.
But we have teachers.
I think what's happening is sometimes we get naive in believing, you know, the system is working, when in effect there's flaws in the system. And instead of looking at the flaws and saying, you know what, let's address this as a whole, or let's address this on a local level like Rochester, Buffalo, we're trying to put a cookie cutter approach mm-hmm. to a more complex issue. Now, it's to me, it's unacceptable to have students in a classroom on the first day of school and you're talking about state testing. You're teaching towards the test.
Good teachers don't.
But at the same time, when you're graduating students that are black and brown and your graduating percentage is 10, 11, 12 for 4 years, I mean, there's a fundamental problem. We should not be focusing.
But that has nothing to do with the test. I mean, those students were graduating at that race before the test. So let's not mix apples and oranges.
Since the
implementation of these tests on the Common Core, the first two high school graduating classes to go through have had record graduation rates, and graduation rates have gone up in Rochester and Buffalo.
I'm talking through 4 years, not through 5, 6, or 7 year graduations.
All right, just because I've kept Steve longer than I was allowed to, and I know he wishes he could stay, and I wish he could as well. Steve, I know you're a busy guy. Thanks for taking the time for the program. He's the executive director of High Achievement New York.
I appreciate it, and Evan, I hope to be on when I'm up there again. I'd love to be on in person.
Open door, thanks, Steve.
With this whole crew.
Yeah, you got it. Steve. Nice to meet you.
Hey,
you
Steve,
got
let's
you
get your contact much. Information, sir.
Yeah,
you got it, and so let me reset the hour for you as we say goodbye to Steve, because I see the phone ringing, and parents and whoever you are in the community, you want to call in and chime in, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. And despite some of the emotion you're hearing in this room, I think everyone agreed before the hour began, and what you're seeing is emotion because everyone wants good outcomes for kids. And these are parents who may disagree on certain things, but they respect each other, and we're trying to find the best solution for kids. So let me go back to Eileen Graham before I get to some phone calls here. You heard Sam saying a couple of things that I want your take on. First of all, if I'm correct, Sam, your point is this isn't as high stakes as some other tests because, you know, when we talk about high stakes tests, we're talking pass, fail, move on or not, teacher losing a job or not, and they've taken some of the teeth out that would make it as high stakes as maybe it used to be. Is that fair,
Absolutely
Sam?
Correct.
Okay, so how do you define this as high stakes? Go ahead.
I define it as high stakes because I look around, especially with the receivership, we get hit with these different laws every 3 or 4 years, and it's frightening to me that these exams are punitive. They appear to be punishing. I mean, I've read letters from principals, from chiefs of schools, threatening their staff, threatening their teachers, threatening parents to not opt out. And I'm literally saying, you know what, we have a right. This is our right. And until we find out exactly what's going on and how this is affecting our children and our district and our schools, because there are teachers, awesome teachers and staff who are fighting for their schools. And once these results come out, they're back into receivership. So the language is not changing. If what you're saying is true, It's hurting. These exams are hurting our schools, hurting schools that are number 44 school. They're working so hard. I mean, teachers are coming in early, staying late, and I know this for a fact.
So there is an outcome, an impact that you're saying makes this high stakes.
And we have to have the truth. Yeah. The truth. We cannot have patronizing conversations with people. Our language has to be clear, and we have to help people understand that as a result of these exams, and this is why I opted out, because now I've talked to people who have helped me fully understand what's happening if I opt in.
All right, Sam, where is she wrong on that?
Because our children were being hurt before these exams. So let's not make the connection between our children being hurt in these standardized tests. I mean, if you go back and look historically at the graduation rate in Rochester and Buffalo in particular, our children are already being hurt. Actually, with these standardized tests and the teacher evaluation and the receivership, those things are actually brought in to help solve the problem. So if we need to be able to tweak them to help them solve the problem, let's do that. But let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater.
That's not realistic. If you're giving a school
Let me finish what I'm saying. If you're giving a student a year that's been a failing school for 10 years or more. So you're saying that if you've been a failing school for 10 years, if you can't get it right in a year, understand that the schools that they give in a year, they already, under the school improvement grant, every one of those schools had 3 years where they got an additional $200,000 to turn the school around and didn't turn the school around.
Are the
now they're giving them an additional year with another pot of money. So you can't just keep putting good money after bad money, not holding people accountable, not having no standard by which you evaluate the teacher to determine whether they're working or what they're, if they're doing good work or not. So the reality is we can't keep doing what we do and expect something different. Then when we do something different, we can't say, oh, our children are the one that are being hurt by what we're doing different, because this is actually done for our children, Sam, to change it for our children.
We're not improving at what our flaws are. Our children cannot read. Our children can't, as a whole, they can't read, write, or do math at their grade level. Now, we expect them to do well on a standardized test, to be prepared for a standardized test, when in fact, it's going to make it more difficult for them to not only do well, but to achieve in school when they're automatically being put behind the eight ball.
The point you just made is that the reason why we know where our children are at in math and that they're not doing well is because we took the standardized test. That's why we know that.
That was done before.
But the point I'm making to you, though, is that we know that that's how we know. We know what they're doing in comparison to all the children that they're going to have
but
to compete with in the country.
That's
not true. When Brighton instituted the Common Core, the first year, they didn't do well either.
That's the point I'm making.
That's one of the top districts.
I've sent four children to college. Here's one of the main things that happen when you send a child to a college, right? When you send a child to college, either they're ready for college or not. And if they're not, when they show up, they have to take 9-credit-bearing courses that you as a parent have to pay for. And if you haven't sent a child to college, understand the significance under having to pay for courses that, and the only reason you have to pay for those courses is because the child is not ready. With Common Core, the goal of Common Core was to make sure that your child was college and career ready. So it said what you need to know in 12th grade so that when you go to college, you don't have to take 9-credit-bearing courses. So you need to know what, I need to know your 12th grade all the way down to first grade, and you put together a set of standards to make sure a child is prepared. Tell me what's wrong with that. Tell me if you have to compete on a global level, why would I want my child not prepared to go to college?
Sam, you forgot to add the money into that too, as well as these teachers don't know if they're going to be working from year to year as well. I mean, there's a lot that goes into that.
I'm not here fighting for teachers. That's not what I'm here for.
I'm fighting for the betterment of the system.
I'm here talking about children who have not historically been performing well in measures that we have put in place to try to help those children do better.
So the first thing that we did to do that
is come up with a set of common standards that all children all across the country, and these are standards that children all across the world really. And if we're competing in a global context, this is the measurement that we use to know where our children are at.
I just want to jump in and say, Eileen's been waiting. I'm late for a break. I'm getting a ton of reaction. I do want to work on some phone calls. Yeah. Right. We got a lot of passion in the room. We got three parents, one also a grandparent, who love their kids, and it's a very interesting discussion. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the opt-out movement and the tests, and interestingly enough, a lot of the numbers are looking somewhat similar to last year. A little less buzz, I think, in the media this year about the opt-out movement, but they're roughly the same. Some districts in Monroe County a little bit less, some a little bit more, some roughly the same. And if it ends up being the same as last year, it'd be about 1 out of 5 kids, 20% around the state. So when we come back after this short break, we'll come back, reintroduce our panelists, take some of your phone calls, talk more about standardized tests, these state tests, and where we go next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we welcome Erica Christakis to the program. She's the author of the new book, The Importance of Being Little, What Preschoolers Really Need from Grownups. Christakis is an expert in early childhood education, and she says our country has largely pushed creativity and play away from a child's experience. And she says there are real consequences long term. We'll talk about it next hour.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Eastman School of Music, presenting the Toronto Symphony Orchestra, performing Bach and Shostakovich, featuring Peter Ungen conducting and Angela Hewitt on piano, Friday, April 15th at Kodak Hall at Eastman Theater. Tickets at eastmantheater.org.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We've got three guests in studio. Eileen Graham and Ronald Hall are here. They're co-founders of Black Student Leadership. It's an advocacy group for families, and they are really a part of the opt-out movement. They support the opt-out movement for the reasons that you are hearing from them this hour. Sam Radford is here, drove in from Buffalo, and we appreciate that. He's got two kids, five grandkids. He's a protesting advocate. He's head, not protest, pro-tester. He's a head of the Buffalo District Parent Coordinating Council. Earlier this hour, we talked to Steve Sigmund by phone, the executive director of High Achievement New York, which supports the test for a variety of reasons. And what I want to do is read a couple of emails and take some of your phone calls as well. And here's an example of how split parents are, at least from what we're seeing. And this is not scientific, but here's just a couple of examples. Bill writes to us. He's a Byron Burgeon parent. He says, my daughter now in 10th grade, my son is in 7th grade, have taken the tests every year. My son said each of the English tests took about an hour to one and one half hour. He didn't appear to be stressed at all. Both kids complain far more about how boring their daily classes tend to be than how difficult or stressful the state tests are. This whole issue is a testament to the power of NICET. That's from Bill. But Mary writes to us and says, how are the tests diagnostic when the teachers do not get the results until the following year? These do not inform instruction. You spend all this time preparing for the test. You waste valuable instructional, remedial, and enrichment time. And parents don't even see the results. Teachers don't see the results. It sounds like a bunch of baloney. She says there are schools in the Rochester City School District which have signs up on the entrance so that the first thing students see when they walk in the door is a reminder to focus on the test. So two very different takes there. And let me jump on the phone to Aria. Aria's been waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. It's Aria. I am a parent of three children in the Rochester City School District. And I am calling to touch base about two items, some of the misinformation around the test, and also some of the errors in the test. I, like Eileen, am not anti-testing. I do believe in benchmark testing so that it gives immediate feedback to the teachers and the administrators at a building to meet the instructional needs of the kids. Unfortunately, these tests don't do that. The RCSD does have a system of benchmark testing that's district-wide. They use the NWEA, AIMSWeb, and the DRA, among other tests. And this lets us see across third grade how kids are doing, across fourth grade, fifth grade, across kindergarten, across sixth grade. It basically hits every grade, at least in elementary school. I am a little concerned about items I've been hearing about promotion and retention of children based on these tests. State Ed did come out this year and say we're not using these tests to determine promotion or retention of students, and they have said it in the past. But this week I was in a building and a third grade teacher said to me, gee, I hope my kids do well because I'll use this to determine their intervention for next year. And so although that's not directly promotion or retention, it concerns me that some teachers think that this is a good tool for that rather than using the benchmark test that they do three times a year. The other issue I wanted to talk about was that these tests do affect the school standings list. And so when you look at the school standings list, you overwhelmingly see schools with children who live in poverty. High concentration poverty schools on the priority and focus list. And so to say that these tests are not disproportionately affecting black and brown students is false. They are.
All right, Aria,
disproportionately, black and brown students are the ones living in poverty in our community. These tests are punishing that group of children by deeming their schools failing.
All right, Aria, thanks so much for the phone call. And I want to start with Eileen Graham. For your reaction, we'll go around the table. Go ahead, Eileen.
Awesome. It just makes me think about how we demonize, you know, our children and demonize the schools. And as I stated earlier, so many people are working so hard to empower our children, to help, you know, help them learn and take into account their learning styles. This exam does not do that for us. It does not, you know, and I'm not anti any other group. I love all children, you know, when I support where I can. But we have to let New York State know that we're not going to tolerate this. We're not going to tolerate exams that demonize our students, demonize our district, and demonize our teachers. Our teachers know what our children need. Now, we do have some leadership problems, but, you know, I'm not going to sit back and keep allowing children to be duped by one exam. It's not showing, it doesn't show. I would like to have a conversation with New York State where I can see a direct result of how this is going to help the child in the same year, not next year, because they're going to have a different teacher with a different style, a different leader in the classroom. So until then, I'm opting out.
Okay, Sam?
You know, nothing offends me more than when people suggest that poverty is the reason why our kids can't learn. I mean, I think that the reality is if the teachers had all those answers, they would have had those answers way before now. I mean, when it's all said and done, you know, our children suffer the most based on what's going on. In Buffalo, we've went from a 47% graduation rate to a 61% graduation as a result of things like the standardized test and receivership and the pressure that's been put on the system to respond to the needs of our children. You know, the reality is the vast majority of teachers in Buffalo in particular have opted out of living in the city and moved to the suburbs and have abandoned the inner city and urban school district. And they went out and protected their children at the expense of our children. We didn't have no conversation about opting out when from 2002 to 2010 when it was not connected to teacher evaluation. We only had a conversation about opting out when we tried to hold teachers accountable for the fact that our children wasn't learning. And so now that coupling is what stimulated this effort to try to stop, you know, this testing. Our children have to test. The reality is all through their life, you know what I'm saying, whether it's the Regents test they're going to have to take in high school, whether it's the SAT, ACT they're going to have to go to college, whether it's a civil service exam that you're going to have to take to get a good a government job, you're going to be tested. So to talk about people being stressed and to teach, that the reality is that's what we're going to have to do in life.
Let me just follow up with one point there before I get to Ron, because you said nothing offends you more than when people say kids in poverty can't learn.
Right.
You're right. A child in poverty absolutely can learn. But I'm wondering if your statement ignores the fact that children in poverty more often than kids in affluent homes don't learn for a variety of reasons. Lack of parent involvement, lack of nutrition, lack of opportunity, lack of a home, couch surfing, you know, all of those things. I'm not saying they can't learn,
right,
but are you ignoring some of the realities that
no.
makes it much harder to learn?
As a teacher who taught in a school that had 97% free and reduced lunch, I understand the impact on poverty. But when a child walks into my classroom as a teacher, I don't see the poverty. I see the child, every child comes in where they at, and you have to make an intervention on what the child needs to move them to the next place. A good teacher can do that. I'm going to say that the cultural disconnect that the teacher has a larger impact on whether the child learns than the poverty do. Let me finish my point. So the fact that the teacher come from a whole nother reality, they come from a suburban, white middle class privileged reality, and they're coming into a urban poverty area trying to understand the child, and they don't understand that child. And that has a larger impact than poverty. So they now use the poverty as the excuse to justify why the children are not learning, when the truth of the matter is the good teachers, it has no impact. The good teachers figure out a way to teach those same poor children just like they teach the affluent
and
children.
And the teachers are doing that, and then they take this exam, and then that negates everything that the teachers have been working so hard to build these children. I don't suggest that a white suburban male or female cannot empower black and brown children. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I'm not going to allow my child to take a test to negate everything that these teachers have been doing in this building from September to April.
But that's just not
common sense.
That's not what happens. The reality is that the child is more impacted on
what
the
do you
teacher.
Mean that's not what happens?
Let me finish the point.
Okay.
So the child is more impacted on the test that the teacher gives. The teacher gives the test. If the child can't read, write, try to do math, they fail the teacher-given test. When they fail the teacher-given test, they turn around, they don't pass the grade.
So are we trying to use the test to assess teachers?
No. What I'm telling you is that the assessment test, that standardized test, does not determine whether a child can read, write, do math, or pass to the next grade. All that test comes from the teacher. So if the teacher cannot culturally connect to the child therefore is not learning, the standardized test...
But the test is culturally inappropriate.
The teacher test is too.
Here's what the issue is, okay? We have to address the hiring standards that we do in the school in all urban districts. These two, you're correct. The teachers come in, they're not culturally competent in what the barriers that the children go on in the homes and the schools and stuff like that. You know, growing up, I grew up in the projects. So I knew I had friends that, you know, unfortunately, they made the wrong decisions. Teachers are saying, you know what? What's going on with you? They would talk about them for 10, 15 minutes. The next thing you know, they wouldn't come back to class again. But back to the original point, though, about poverty. I think a lot of educators use poverty as an excuse. But I also think, too, that there is a serious problem. Because when you keep people down, what happens? You get money to feed into the beast, okay? The beast of being of poverty. And people make a lot of money off that through these tutoring programs and stuff such like that, to where, you know, I read an article that proving that they have been ineffective. But in order for us to bring it back to the Common Core testing, until we address the basics, you know, I'm not anti-testing. I'm just anti-Common Core because it's not addressing the basics of which we need for our students to be successful in a global economy. And also, too, we're shifting towards an Asian education model, to where the government controls everything, so they're only going to give the numbers out that they want to give out. Yeah, there are some geniuses over there, but from my recollection, I don't see any Nobel Peace Prize winners.
They took the
Common Core, taking the creativity out of school, and what's happening is the teachers are teaching, spending valuable time teaching towards this test instead of building on knowledge.
Well,
I can say why I think the numbers are down this year, you know what I'm saying, or the numbers are flat, is because last year this was driven by a mass influx of resources coming from the teachers union. I mean, so the teachers union got invested, and their investment was because it was tied to teacher evaluations.
Mm-hmm.
The minute you decouple it from teacher evaluation, the teachers, the stress is off of them, the pressure is off of them, so you don't see the union putting a bunch of money to back these opt-outers, you know what I'm saying? So now they out here by themselves, so they stand flat or going down. Let something go on to affect the teachers. These teachers don't care about what's going on with our children in the urban school district.
I disagree with that.
We have some of the most segregated school system district in the country.
And
we have to segregate. So they're not concerned about that segregation. They're not concerned about being in the same place with their children, sending their children to the schools that they teach in. They're concerned about their jobs. And to the extent that their jobs are on the line, they'll put up resources to back opt-outers. They'll support them, but the minute you secure their job, they ease off and they go back to benefiting and exploiting the interests of minority children to their own to their benefit and at the expense of those minority children.
I agree with part of your statement. I dissent in part. I don't think that teachers are, as a whole, are exploiting our children.
I'm not talking about teachers. Well, I'm a teacher. I'm talking about unions.
I don't think the union's exploiting our children.
Well, look at the record.
Well, the union's supposed to do what's best interest for the teachers.
Yeah, but not the children. That's parents' job. Our job is to do what's best interest.
Well, that's our school. Our school board is supposed to be a check on that. But unfortunately, in Rochester, Buffalo, our school boards are terrible. You know?
And I think that to stick to the point of why I'm here is to really make sure that we do what's best for the children
exactly.
in the classroom, because they are with our children more than we are. And in order for our teachers, because the union does represent the teachers, but they don't represent every teacher. You know, I don't represent every black female. What I'm saying is I don't represent every black parent, but it is my job every day when I wake up to give the parents that look like me the information for them to make well-informed decisions. If the union is doing something that is evil and that is wrong, and we know that, we have the power as parents to speak up.
They're doing what's in their interest.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So now
no,
our
I honestly do agree with you on that, because I know that the teachers have not been as supportive. The union has not been as supportive. But guess what? I have a lot of influence, because I'm going to use my voice to let parents know we're not just going to stop here. Our shortcoming is what's next. What are we going to do next to empower our children, empower our teachers, to make sure that dynamic in the classroom is better.
All right, everyone, let me jump in and grab another phone call, because we've had some folks waiting. I want to try to squeeze in some more of the calls. In Canandaigua, this is Gloria. Go ahead, Gloria.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think that talking about testing in this kind of way is so, but very redundant and not real helpful. And I have seen, I don't know if many people in New York State in the education area are looking at what's happened in other cities. The one that I know particularly about is Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which has had funding cuts, has a very generally overall very poor district and all that. But what they have been doing, which has incredibly appealed to children loving school, is that they have been increasing having public Montessori schools and having early childhood education. Once you look at that and deal with kids from where they are and where their love is, kids, people love to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not forget that, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the phone call.
Look at that, they keep having more and more public Montessori schools, mm-hmm. because the kids love being there. The kids love it, and then they learn.
Well, Gloria, thanks for the phone call. On the flip side of the question on creativity, kids loving to learn, we had a listener, and I want to grab this question real briefly, and I'll kick this over to Ron, because, Ron, you've said several times your concern is that teachers are stuck teaching to the test more than probably they would want to, kind of limits them. And on Twitter, Mike writes to us and essentially says, if the tests are good, and again, we're debating whether the tests are good, but he's saying, is teaching to the test inherently bad? Can't kids learn problem solving and critical thinking that way?
They can, but also, too, you have to have the skills, the proper building skills, in order to do that. As a teacher, you should not just be teaching towards the test. You should be teaching knowledge so when they're giving a test, they can excel on that test. But that's not happening. They're going over this Common Core, you know, on the first day of school. They're putting the pressure on the students. This is what you have to do. We need you to do well because you guys are in honors. That's unacceptable.
Could that change now that the state has decoupled test results, teacher evaluations?
That could. There's not going to be as much pressure on the teachers union.
But they also, what we're talking about is a bad teacher. Good teachers don't come in and teach to the test. They teach the fundamentals on what a child needs to learn. And if the child learns them, they'll be able to perform on a test.
But like the caller just said, we're being redundant. And I think that we have to help people fully understand what's happening here. We cannot. These exams are useless. I don't care how much better they get. They need to go away. We have measures that we're using. Parents are really starting to get involved. Parents, as a parent, I didn't want to get involved because I didn't want to fight with people who use language that I don't understand. I'm not dumb, but I talk to people every day in the grocery store, in the laundromat, and they want the same thing that the parents want in Pittsburgh. They want their children to do well. Some of them don't have a high school diploma,
Let me ask you a question, Eileen, because you've been making the point that your concern is that these tests are disproportionately negative for kids in poverty, black and brown students, as you say.
Yes.
Right? But most of the highest opt-out numbers are in the most affluent districts. Why do you think that's happening?
Now, I have to agree with Sam. I think that had to do with the teacher assessment. But I don't think we should do, for the lack of a better word, I don't think we should, at the expense of our children, because now we were wondering about, okay, where are the suburban parents in the opt-out movement? If the teachers are greatly impacted, we see them out fighting. Because at that point, their jobs are on the line. This is not about just the teachers for me. This is absolutely about the students first.
I'm looking at the opt-out numbers according to the Democrat and Chronicle last year in Monroe County. The lowest opt-out percentage in the county was the city school district.
20. Same in Buffalo.
Right. Because we didn't know. We didn't even know about it.
No,
honestly,
because that's
we
not our interest. That's not our fight. I mean, in an urban school district, we have to come to terms with the fact that the teachers fight. The teachers are fighting in their own interest. That's not our fight. Our fight happened before the opt-out movement. Our fight is going to be here after opt-out is long gone.
What is our
gone.
Fight?
Our fight is for every one of our children to learn. Every one of our children actually has the full potential. So, and what happens is this. Because the teachers union gives us perspective that all teachers are the same, mm-hmm. when they not. All teachers are not
right,
the same.
But you said point. This isn't about leadership,
though. So some teachers are very good and some teachers are very bad.
Right.
And the teachers union protect all teachers.
Correct.
And so to the extent that we can't get those teachers who can't teach out, they circle a wagon around mm-hmm. them to protect them.
So they use
this test as an excuse to protect the bad teachers. And we got to get the bad teachers because all teachers are not good.
The bad teachers are being protected anyway. I mean, when you have a teacher that has to go for tenure, they're only an administrator spending 10 minutes before they give them a tenure. That's protecting a bad teacher.
That's true.
But at the same time, we can't use this Common Core. Here's what the issue is, Evan. Our children are having deficiencies reading, writing, and doing math. Okay.
That's because they're not learning.
So how do you expect them? Then why are the teachers not teaching those skills? And
the good teachers are teaching. The good teachers are teaching. Those kids are learning. But the reality is their children are not in the school system, so they don't have no skin in the game. When you have skin in the game, you have a whole different attitude. So what happens is when you start evaluating those teachers, that means that the teachers who cannot cut the mustard, they get exposed. They don't want to be exposed. They want to be protected.
All right. 20 seconds. Last point, Ron. Go ahead.
My last point is this. You can't effectively, these teachers don't know from year to year if they're going to have a job or not. And I'm not here advocating for the teachers, but you don't know if they're going to year to year to have a job or not. On top of that, you have to worry about Common Core as well as what they have going on in their classroom, as well as their personal life. That's too much pressure to put on anybody to perform their jobs, period.
All right, listen, I know what we have is a lot of disagreement on this, but again, I want to thank our guests for their passion and their care about their kids, no matter where they're coming from. Ron Hall and Eileen Graham, founders of Black Student Leadership, an advocacy group for families in Rochester. And I appreciate both of your time. Eileen, nice to see you here. Thank you for being here. Good luck to you, Ron. Thank you. And our thanks to Sam Radford for taking the time to come all the way from Buffalo. He is the head of the Buffalo District Parent Coordinating Council, among other things. 2 kids, 5 grandkids, and busy day. I know you took the time to come all the way here, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Evan. This was a great discussion.
Well, thank you. And thanks to everyone and all the interest from our listeners. Short break. We're staying on education. We're talking early childhood education, the way we teach, and are we stifling creativity? That's next.